Can't hear you still.
Of course you wouldn't, because it was on mute.
Okay.
And as I was saying, a big happy birthday.
Thank you. Oh my goodness.
What a gift you're giving me to have this podcast on your birthday. Thank you for the gift.
Well, yes. Thank you. Of course. Just 1 second.
I am so thankful you're here, giving me the most valuable thing that you can do is your time, especially on your birthday. What a beautiful gift. I get to celebrate you. I get to engage in a very intimate, deep conversation that we get to share with others, and they get to hear a sneak peek of our relationship. And I'm just really thankful to be in this space with you and to celebrate you and to amplify your voice and, you know, engage in this beautiful conversation that we're going to dive into.
Wonderful.
Having the intimacy and the kindness, the compassion, and the safe space to allow you to speak openly and freely about your story.
100. And this is all possible because you've allowed yourself to be vulnerable and open and create a safe space where people like me can talk to you about what's really going on inside. I don't do this with everybody. I've created very strong boundaries in the past 4 years, and I only spend my time with people that I feel safe with. And that's a priority in my life now. So this is happening because you've created it, and I appreciate that so much.
I truly do. Let's go into a meditation so that we can drop into the moment, open our hearts together, and then we can be the vessel to let whatever needs to be said to be said. So find a comfortable position and just close your eyes. And if you can, begin breathing in and out through your nose. And just watching your breath go in and out. Whatever sensations or feelings that might be coming up, it's okay. You're safe to feel them while still keeping your attention on your breath and allowing yourself to drop into the body. Staying with your breath. When you're ready, you're going to gently open your eyes. How is your heart doing?
Oh. My heart is relaxed. I feel very relaxed and calm.
Can you tell the listeners who Lorraine is?
Wow. I'm figuring that out still, but I have come to terms with who I'm not and who I don't want to be anymore. So I would say that I'm definitely a work in progress. I am resilient for sure. That I agree with 100%. I am a container that's holding a very special spirit and soul that I've just learned to honor. She is a lot stronger than I have ever allowed her to be. So there's a burning soul inside of me that has awakened, and I'm just getting to know her, but she's fierce. Yeah.
Since when you were last on the podcast, you had become a mother again, and you were in a relationship and living with your partner at the time. And these guys were all cohabitating like a family. Yet since then, a lot has transpired. Whatever you feel safe and comfortable with sharing, can you, because now that you're explaining who Lorraine is and who you're discovering, I'm sure this was a catalyst to ignite and open up a lot of things within yourself and to face a lot of parts within yourself. And so if you can give us, you know, the story of what has transpired since the last time we've had that podcast. I know it's a big mouthful.
Yeah. And I have to listen to that podcast again. Actually, not that I forgot about it, I actually thought it was after we had separated. So this is going to be interesting because I was in the abuse when I started my podcast in 2020. I'll just give the listeners a little backup. So Nat and I know each other from back in the day in Ottawa. I had a child at 15 years old and raised him on my own pretty much. And he's now 32 years old. And at 44, I had another child. Again, surprise, both children were unplanned. But beautiful gifts of God and also gentle whispers that there are teachers out there waiting to be born. So when I got into this relationship, it was in 2019 where I became pregnant and was told that if I had this child, a person was going to unalive themselves, which was my son's father. And at that time, I was very connected with my body, my spirit, and I knew that I was going to have this child no matter what. So we ended things. I think it was like in November of 2019. And I had went on a quest to raise this child alone. At the time, I had a daycare in Verdun, Montreal. 12 years, I've been running this daycare, very successful. I had an Airbnb right beside it. In fact, I was making more money with the Airbnb than I was with the children. But I love working with children. It's been my passion my whole entire life. Excuse me. I moved from Ottawa to Montreal to study the early childhood education system, very much against my parents' desires, wanting me to go to law school. And I've worked for so many politicians and lawyers to know that this is not the kind of life that I wanted for myself. So when I moved here, I developed a concept that focused on social emotional development for young children. And I incorporated that into my daycare and was quite persistent to attract the recognition of university professors and students. And at one point in time, I think it was in end of 2018, McGill University student kind of approached me and said, hey, can we do some assessments on children in your daycare? Because we're both aligned with this format of focusing on social emotional development. So I was like, yes, finally my in. So in 2019, I was just on that phase of getting closely connected with McGill. So it was crucial. But then when I got pregnant, I was like, God, how am I going to do this? But then I was like, I'm still going to do this. January 2020 comes around, I get a message from my son's biological father and saying that he wants to make things work and he wants to try and, you know, we're going to put together a parenting plan and blah, 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 and the whole nine yards. So I agreed because I know how important it is to have a father in a child's life, regardless of parental decisions. It's important. My oldest son was very lucky to have strong, powerful men guiding him in his life. And he teaches me now to this day, Theodore. So I agreed. And then COVID hit. And right before we had agreed to move in with each other. And so the first place that we went and saw, or one of the first places that we went and saw, like right the next day that lockdown was. And my ex is very strategic, very calculated. So when we went to see the apartment, he had already had a lease on him. He already had all of the qualifications. And in Quebec, I think there's some kind of law, like if you meet all the qualifications of to have the apartment, a landlord cannot refuse you. So right then and there, when we saw this apartment, he's like, you're signing this lease, we're taking this place. And I was just like, you know, like Mary and Joseph with a baby, we just need a place to stay. I'm like, I'm going to go anywhere. And I was filled with so much fear about COVID. All I was concerned was about my own personal safety and my child. So we got the place. My pregnancy was stressed, but I managed well because I had to close my businesses. I had to move stuff, put stuff in storage, you know, lay off staff, you know, not have three lost connections with children that I'd cared for years and probably won't see for a very long time. So that was challenging, but I poured into myself as I could. And then I didn't know the abuse was happening. The abuse was happening while I was pregnant, but I didn't recognize it. After I had my son Sparrow in 2020, Father's Day, ironically, summer solstice, I just knew that I was fucked because I was weak after having a baby. I'm 44. And I knew something was wrong with me. And I found out later on that I actually had three hernias that had to be operated on a year or so later. So I relied heavily on my ex to provide food, calmness in the home, peace in the home, help with the children. And I say children because he has children of his own. And during COVID, obviously schools were cut, locked down. And I was caring for not only his daughter, but his daughter's half-brother, with no pay. I took care of these children with no pay, no problems. But when it came time to get my car fixed with the same parents of these children, I'd have to pay to get my car fixed. So I started asking questions like, how come I have to pay for services that they have rendered for me, and yet I watch their children all day and they don't pay me at all? But oh, it's because we're part of family. So that's, and family is a big deal for me. I'm the last of five children. So I know all about family and sacrifice and putting in the hard work and getting up early and making food, lunches, all that stuff. I know. But this just felt like I was being taken advantage of. So I decided that I was going to pour into myself and develop a podcast in 2020 called the Star Parent Podcast. And it was basically parenting myself and others. And I had a variety of guests on, and every single guest that I had on, and I think it was when I had Mark Robert Waldman. He is a expert neuroscientist in the States. Every guest that I would have, my ex would just become more and more jealous and more possessive. Like, I used to do the podcast on his laptop. And I remember there was like, right before I had a big guest, he's like, you can't use the laptop anymore. I'm sorry. Delete everything. And I was this state of panic. Okay. Because imagine you're preparing for a podcast and you have to change everything. It was so many things of control. And like, there was like, I had to sign contracts to use utensils in the kitchen because I didn't clean them and put them back properly. Like, I love cooking. I love creating, cleaning up. So this is part of the exchange. When you're living with people, someone's cooking and preparing food for the children, like, hello, load the dishwasher. But that wasn't the case. That was part of the control. So slowly he started to harass me to put the utility bills in my name. I'm not working. I'm not going to use that word anymore. I used to say this often, but I'm going to change my narrative. I was so trusting that I gave him my maternity leave because he made more money than I did. And so I wasn't receiving money. He was my groceries, food, and I had to go into my savings. I had to go into my credit card. I had to order food online. I didn't want to create any problems in the house because I just... Imagine waking up and there's someone sitting over you going, did you forward the hydro in your name yet? I asked you to do it. Have you done it? I'm waking up to somebody in my face doing this. So I finally transferred whatever he wanted me to do. I just did it just so I could have peace. And it was never enough. It was just never enough. So May 31st, very important to remember this day because he created this huge fiasco, like big discard. If people understand narcissistic abuse, if you're following me now, I already shared a little bit about the love bombing and the future faking, and this was complete discard for me. And he placed false charges on me during this occasion, which led to criminal charges and a year and a half for me to prove myself innocent. Actually, I didn't even have to prove myself innocent. It just happened that way. He told on himself in court. The judge called him immature, dishonest, and very manipulative, and said, "Miss Campbell, you need protection." And this happened December 6, 2023. And that was the validation that I needed it to just, something woke up inside of me, like, you see this. Finally, somebody in authority sees this. I mean, and there's so many people that see it, but somebody to say something. So during these year and a half, from 2021 to 2023, I wasn't able to work with children. I wasn't able to work in my daycare. I wasn't able to go back and work within my profession, everything that I have learned and studied my whole life. And he still has a salary. He's still getting money. So he managed to convince a family court judge that I was an unfit mother because from May 31st to August 2021, he was absent in our lives. I didn't know where he was living. I didn't know where he was. Nothing. So I put my son in developmental programs, as any parent would do. But I didn't ask for his permission. So the judge said that I was not being a good co-parent. Number one, that's one reason why I had my son taken away from me. I was also told I was not a good mother because I taught my son how to pray, and I didn't get the approval of the father. Again, somebody who had gone for 3 months. And the third reason was I didn't enroll my son in a government-funded $8 a day daycare after 35 years of experience and charging my clients almost $70 a day for care, because we had a trilingual program. We had excursions, you name it, gardening, food preparation, everything on site. And they said that you didn't put your child in this prison, so we're going to take him from you while you're breastfeeding. And we're going to put him in daycare 5 days a week, and you can have him every other weekend and Thursday night until the criminal courts decide whether or not you're innocent or not. So I'm still not working. My funding's gone. My child is taken away. I still have this podcast. I still have a voice. And I still have God. So I knew I was going to win in the end. So I'm winning now because I'm here. I'm alive. It's my birthday. I'm 48 years old. And I can smile and say, thank you, Lord, for this lesson. Thank you for teaching me how to identify when someone is taking advantage of my kindness. Thank you for showing me how to create strong boundaries and stick to them. Thank you for showing me the friends that I can rely on and the friends that I have to let go of. And thank you for reminding me that I'm alive.
Let's just take a moment.
Yeah. I'm going to get a
minute. Catch your breath, because it was, you know, when there's trauma, and this is just fresh. You just said it was that you were validated that, you know, you are the one that is in need of protection, and the story and narrative that this person portrayed about you was all false. And in actuality, you're the one that is needing the safety and security of the courts.
Yes.
Thank you for being so open, vulnerable in that moment. And
thank you.
We're going to take a breath.
Thank you. Wow. I've only done this in a courtroom, and having evil eyes staring at you makes it so much easier not to cry, but having loving eyes gazing at you just allows for a release. So thank you.
Needed. It's a lot of different emotions that are being explored. And also, when we're going through our experiences, there's a survival mode that goes on that we just don't have the bandwidth to be as sensitive and as vulnerable as we would like to be, because there's things that we have to endure and we have to get through. And so, you know, you're moving forward, but looking back. So it's like you're passing past selves of yourself and seeing it with other eyes, because in those moments, you know, you didn't know where it was going to be. You didn't know what was going to transpire. At points, I'm like, I know you shared with me, it's like, this is so dark and like no one's listening to me. And it's like this system that is filled with so much racism and stereotyping, and then women are treated a certain way, you know, and then, you know, the dynamics of friends and society. And as soon as somebody gets charged, automatically people think, oh, well, they're guilty. And I don't know if you've, you know, in this experience now, it's like, oh, wait, just because I hear about a charge, I have to listen to context, because it doesn't necessarily mean that they got all the information in a correct way. And some women do this to men where, you know, we're going to say some things about men and we just automatically can presume at times, oh, well, why would they lie about it? And it's like, no, there's some people that have such an inferiority complex that they will hurt other people in society.
That's what got me acquitted. When he stood up in front of a judge and said, I had to make these charges because I was afraid she would never let me see my son again. I was like, okay, can we just quit right now? He literally just handed you his reasons for these. Meanwhile, he knows what he's done to me. I can't talk too much about it, but because we're still, those legal proceedings are happening. But I'm wearing glasses because of him. I have a hole in my left eye because of the abuse that I experienced during COVID. This man thought that he could have access to my body whenever he wanted, just because I had a child with him and we were trapped in the same house together. The things he would buy, bring into the house, and I'm like, okay, like, where's groceries? Like, I need to eat food. I got to keep my milk up. I'm hiding food around the house so I can eat. Meanwhile, smiling every day, waking up every morning, reading Psalms 96, 97, praying for joy in the home, harmony in the home. That's all I need. I can't keep my milk if I'm stressed. So all I cared about was peace.
I'm sorry you experienced all that.
I know there's a reason for it, because I can relate to so many people now in different ways that I wasn't able to before. And also, I've always worked with children. My first job when I was 9 years old was working with children, taking care of three children for $2 an hour. I was there like two or three times a week. My whole life was serving, caring, training. So when this happened, I didn't even know who I was. I was stripped of my entire identity that I had created for myself. So it was last year, January 20, 2023, I reached out to an old friend, Sandy Armstrong, and she's a teacher here in Montreal for improv. And I said to her, I really need to do something creative. Can I come to one of your classes? And she's like, yeah, sure. Like, I can arrange delayed payments, whatever. And I'm like, ah, thank you so much. So I paid her in increments. I took the you know, 9-week class or however long it was. And she's like, you are a natural. I want to offer you the next level for free. And then I started doing shows and I was like, oh my goodness, I love this. And I found another improv school and they have been sponsoring me, Adina Katz, for musical improv, Montreal. She has been so supportive and has brought me through every single level. We have a show at the end of February, another one in March. I mean, my whole life has changed. I'm doing stand-up comedy now. I don't even know if I'll be back in a daycare again, because I just love this new side of me that I never knew existed, because I never gave myself time, or I never had the time to do it. I never believed in myself. When I get on stage, all I keep on saying is, I have got nothing to lose. Okay. I have got nothing to lose. I don't give a fuck what y'all think. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. We're adults here. We are adults here, and it's nice to hear you laughing. And,
yeah.
You know, I think in part two, it's not only I didn't have time, it's I gave myself permission to explore.
Ooh, I love that. I gave myself permission to explore sadness. I have never given myself permission before. I come from a family, both of my parents, if you've ever met them, you know, my parents are pretty well known in Ottawa for my dad's Jamaican restaurant that he had for like 35 years. And even my mom, she's so, you know, cheery and giving with her charity work in Jamaica, but they just don't process sadness very well. My parents are bubbly, bubbly people. And when all the sadness would come on to me and I would call out to them for help, they weren't able to hold space. Like, they support me, don't get me wrong, but they just weren't able to hold space. So I learned how to hold space for myself and to find people that could hold space for me while I processed grieving, you know, watching my milk drying up with what, which was not my choice. As much as I tried to keep it myself, all the stress, I just wasn't able to. So that was really, that was giving myself permission to be sad. Probably one of the biggest stepping stones that I use now to be authentic and to be truly vulnerable with others and myself.
You know, to speak on support, I think people forget that there's different layers of support.
Mm.
So people hear, well, they didn't support me this way. They think it's all or nothing. And it's like, no, there's financial support, there's psychological support, there's emotional support. And, you know, a lot of times if an individual doesn't know how to support themselves with emotions, they're not able to hold space for the emotional support of other people. And sometimes people can hold space for it, yet you can also see that there's not a depth because there's still some needing to be just surface. We're not able to go too deep with that. And emotional support is a different type of support than, you know, somebody being able to listen to you or financially support you or psychologically support you. You have to hold that space for those depths of emotions, like, you know, feeling sad, feeling angry, feeling the confused, the frustration, the suicidal ideations, all these different, you know, places that some people just don't have the capacity to hold that. And, you know, our parents' generation, they didn't have emotional support. So it's very few that had that emotional intelligence that they, you know, were received it from their parents or that they developed it on their own. So it becomes, again, this safety mechanism. And it's like, this is an intelligence that I need to dive into because it's not helped me. And I don't realize, you know, some depths and some vertical places that I could be going into yet. I just don't see it being significant.
For sure. One of the best gifts I've had today for my birthday, has been a message from a friend of mine who was getting weird vibes from. One of the things I've promised myself, especially starting this year, is that I challenge my friendships now. I challenge them because, like a tree in every season, when it's shook, some leaves fall off and the tree's still standing. So I shake my friendships up because I want to know where I stand. And one of the most honest messages that I received today is I've been so jealous of the way you've been handling this situation. I'm so jealous of the art projects that you're doing. I'm in my own depression right now. It has nothing to do with you. And I'm just letting you know that. And I was so thankful that he was able to communicate that with me and in such an honest way. Because we don't talk about jealousy a lot within our friendships. But sometimes we feel it. And then it creates other problems. So for me, having conversations about hard feelings, you know, we're bonded for life. Like, that's one of the things that solidified our relationship. I don't remember if you remember this, but back in like maybe 2017 or something, we had a phone conversation. And I just remember crying and feeling so connected with you. But we were like shedding some stuff. And for me, it's like, I need to have hard conversations with people who are, I consider, close to me. Otherwise, I gotta go. This is not for me. So
it's with growth. Like, yes. Being able to have that maturity and it's like, okay, can I speak about my inner world without you personalizing it and having a space of me validating your vibes that something feels off, but me being accountable of saying, well, the reason why you're feeling off is because I'm feeling these sensations.
Yeah.
Yet they're not deliberate. They're thoughts and feelings that are coming up and I'm not acting on them yet. It, you know, and when you start doing your inner work, you recognize like there's all kinds of feelings and thoughts and you're like, but that's not me. And it's like, well, no, it is a part of you. Because that's what it is to be human. Exactly. Jealousy and envy and all these things are going to come up. It's that, are you going to take action on them? Or are you going to be able to, you know, take a responsibility and accountability of feeling that and also replacing it with something else? Like, you can do end in both, not one or the other, not black and white, and not chastising yourself that you should have never and no. It's like, no, have listening skills. Have some compassion, have some understanding, and then have the end in both. Okay, this came up, yet what is it stemming from? And then what can you replace it with?
Yeah, that's said so well. I've simplified this in my mind as you're talking. I kept thinking about a friend of mine, Melissa G. She's a comedian here, and she loves fart jokes. And I was just thinking, it's like a fart. It's like sometimes we make farts and they smell so bad, we have to acknowledge it. Okay. Or we just pretend it was somebody else, but we all know something's happened up in there. And sometimes it's like so silent, you can still acknowledge it, or you can just let it pass by, but you know, something you put in your body is making this thing come out. So it's like just being accountable for human nature. We put stuff into our body and it's going to come out, and it's not just gas or food, it's emotions and energy. So just acknowledging that stinky smell that my friend I put out there and saying, hey, that's why I've been smelling so bad. I'm like, yo, I've been smelling that funk for a while. Thank you for acknowledging it.
I love that visual and to understand it better, because it's exactly like that. And it's just, you know, what a beautiful relationship, what a beautiful friendship that you guys, it's like family, yeah. That you can be that transparent and honest. Those are the kind of connections you want to have in life, that I can be seen in my naked truth, rawness, and you're not going to reject me and push me away or clothe me and tell me that I can't be naked with you. That it's too imperfect. It's too harmful. It's too ugly. It's too this and that. It's like you're accepting it exactly how it is. Mm-hmm. And we move forward. That's a beautiful relationship. Not many people are blessed with those kind of relationships. And it takes work.
Yes. I cried. And I said, this is the best birthday gift present that anyone's giving me today. This is the beautiful gift. And I thank you for that. Like, just because, you know, some people don't know how to deal with this. And they'll say like, oh, you need to heal. Go and heal yourself. And then we can come back and be friends again. And it's like, maybe part of my healing is letting this friendship dissolve. And for me, like, I just, like, I'm tired of fakeness. It's all like, I just need to feel the realness in anyone that I connect with. Otherwise I just detach and find something a little bit more richer, you know?
Exactly. I think also too, with, for myself and my journey, there's been some relationships that have come back, and we've had some pretty open conversations and heartfelt conversations. And at one point they said that in my journey, it felt like they couldn't relate to me, or they felt like I was in a space that felt superior to them because of the actions that I did, and that they didn't know where they fit in into my life. And when I reflect back, I'm like, okay, yeah, I can say these few years, it was almost like I was in a cocoon and I was doing some things that were extreme. Not everybody would take those actions that I did, yet I was engaged in a way of really burning away a lot of things within myself and better having self-awareness and understanding. So yeah, it would be like a cocoon and you wouldn't be able to get in there because I had to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. In a way of really seeing who I was and finding out things. And now that the cocoon is dissolved and, you know, there's a metamorphosis, like you see that certain parts of my old is still here. Yeah. And if you're willing to be in this space, it's, everything's okay. Yeah. Yet you have to be able to, or we have to be able to communicate, and we have to be able to communicate our emotions. And I'm still learning that this, because I just had a heart-to-heart conversation with a dear friend that some things happened last month that were very painful for both of us. And it was a lack of communicating how we felt and what was going on, and seeing parts of our personalities that we didn't know, or we knew were there, but we just didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes with the healing part, you know, there is a cocoon where people don't know how to relate and don't know how to hold space. And for me, I've like saw it as, you know, a dock, and not everybody's going to be docked on my dock, but they're going to sail away. Yet it doesn't mean that they can't ever come back and visit. It's not like you're gone forever. You can come back. Yet just recognize the dynamic of the relationship. Unless you've done some inner healing, it won't be the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, they won't be able to find the doc if they haven't done the work.
Yeah.
Because that, what's going to bring them back is that strong connection, and they're going to find you no matter what, if it's right. So yeah, that's one of the, yeah, just leaving it to the universe.
How now, because when you do more healing work and you understand how kind and giving you are, how are you protecting yourself to not allow everybody to use you as a comfy blanket?
That is a very good question. I think I still put the signal out and the intention out that I'm a safe space for people to come to. But I think I've put out the vibe of, it's a safe space for you to come if you're going to be real. If you're not going to be real with me, I'm going to shake the tree. And some people don't feel safe with the shaking of a tree. They don't like their tree to be shook. So, they stay away. And so a lot of things I've just given to God. I don't want to fight anybody. I don't want to hold on to anybody either. I'm just vibrating with others, and what sticks, sticks, and what doesn't, it doesn't. And yes, it does take work. It takes a lot of work, but I think I'm just, I'm more clear. I ask people, what's your expectation? What are you expecting of me? Because that's one of the things I've learned, is a lot of people are expecting a lot from me during the past 4 years, and I wasn't able to give very much. I've not been a very good friend because I have been in survival mode, and I probably won't be a great friend for a little bit longer while I rebuild and discover this person that's coming. But I'm just learning to be a good friend to me, you know, putting boundaries with me. But then at the same time, I've been attracting a lot of wonderful people who have either gone through this experience or know somebody. Yeah. So it doesn't feel like that. I don't feel like anyone's taking advantage of me now. I feel like I have very clear boundaries that no one can stomp on me, not even my siblings.
How is your relationship with anger?
Ooh, that is a very good question. I had a conversation with Sparrow about that the other day. We went skating after the night before. We went to this gospel choir and we got home like around 11:30. And then me with my like energetic self, I get up before him and I'm like getting prepared. We're going skating. So I get him up around 10 and I'm like, Sparrow, let's go skating. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, let's go get breakfast. And I'm rushing him, eat his food, get ready. I really want to go skating. And he's putting on the brave face and he's like, yeah, Mama, we're going to go skating. And we get to the skating rink and we got all suited up and he's just like with his gear and he's just crying. He's just like, and I'm like, come on. And I didn't realize it in the moment that it was after this happened on Sunday. So it's been after a few days of reflection. We're Wednesday now. And I realized I was so triggered by him crying during like a sport. Cause like I grew up in sports and dancing, competitive dancing. Like we traveled a lot. And for me, it was like, stamped into my brain that you have to keep going. There's no time for crying when there's something. So I realized that came up and I started to get angry. And I said to him, he must think I'm some crazy person sometimes because I'm processing my anger. I'm acknowledging that he's sad, pissed off at myself, and I'm still skating. But then I also know that we have to leave. This is not working all at the same time. But I just realized like I still have issues with my anger, but I can identify where is this coming from. I had very competitive coaches. I've always attracted competitive coaches that push me beyond my limits. And Sparrow has made it very clear he does not want that coach as a mom. He has made it very clear, and I respect that. We've had that conversation, and I told them that when you got sad, Mama got really angry, and that didn't feel good. And he was just like yeah. And so we worked at it. I felt really bad that day, actually, and I really wanted to skate, and it was just like this. And I had another reason, too, was I felt a lot of guilt that I only had my son that weekend, and I'm trying to push all these things in to feel like a fulfilled parent when not realizing that just the time spent, like spending an hour in bed reading stories would have been much better than gulping down oatmeal and getting in the car and gear and stuff, you know? It would have been a much more magical experience.
This is the whole part of being a conscious parent is having the accountability that you're willing to see.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wouldn't have been willing to see all that, see all the different dynamics, take responsibility for your part and actually validate your child that you were seeing it the right way. And it wasn't your stuff. It was my stuff. And I didn't know how to be there for your stuff and all these things that transpired. And, you know, I don't know if it's in the podcast yet, you know, yeah, I think it was that you mentioned, you know, you had to make a decision. Am I going to be the teacher mom or am I going to be Sparrow's mom?
Yes.
And I had to decide, like, I'm going to be Sparrow's mom. He doesn't need the teacher. He needs the mom right now. And that can be challenging because that teacher part is in your identity and wanting the best for him. And so now you're recognizing, like, the coach part was in me, yet he needs a mom.
Yes.
He needs that mom to be there.
Yes. I got to bring my mom wherever I go when I'm with him and realize that, yes, the coach in me is needed, maybe for me, but not so much for my son. Like I can use that coach for me and even have a sit down with that coach and say, well, you don't have to be so hard on me, coach.
Exactly. You have a voice now. You can talk back to the coach. What's coming up too is the one thing that you said that you had difficulty with was intimacy.
Oof.
And yeah. So, you know, being in those silent moments brings up a lot of intimacy, but when we're in activities and doing things, there's, you know, there's intimacy, but not, you're still stimulated by the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that relationship and how is that process going with the intimacy?
So that's funny you said that. Great. Overall, improv has helped a lot with that, because when you are doing improv, you're basically creating scenes out of nothing, and you need to make a lot of eye contact with people that you maybe have just spent, you know, a few hours together. And, you know, sometimes you get into these intimate scenes where someone's telling you they love you and they want to marry you, and they're wholeheartedly saying it with conviction because we're in a scene together, and you have to accept that love. And you say, yes, and I can't wait to go on a honeymoon with you, baby. Like, and those things will be hard for me to say in real life. So learning to be present during a scene has helped me to be present in my experiences with people outside of improv. Like, I actually just created, this is an adult podcast, I created a cuddle room in my apartment, because a lot of my friends have polyamorous relationships. And so they have multiple partners, and, you know, that, great. So why not create a room where we can just gather together and hold each other and just cuddle and touch and just be connected. And I would have never done that before. Like, there's no boyfriend walking this planet that says that, well, Lorraine said person likes to hold hands, she just likes to cuddle on the couch. No, I'm not that person. Like, I'm just not. So I'm becoming that person. I'm starting to enjoy just being like just being on the couch. Like, Sparrow loves to cuddle. He's also teaching me that. Sparrow loves to cuddle and touch my face and kiss me and all that stuff, all the stuff that I just didn't like. He loves it. So I'm learning.
But I love seeing the evolution. And I love that you're open to discuss it and see how the process is going. And as you can see, I'm paying attention. And
yes.
I am very involved in your life and listening when, you know, I'm honored that you feel safe to, you know, come and speak to me when you need that space to sort out some things or just vent.
Yeah.
And not have anybody give you advice or tell you how to be, just let you feel and not try to fix it, not try to change it. Just let you sort it out for yourself, but let that steam out. And not feel judged or feel that it's impacting a relationship or anything like that.
Yes. So
it's a real honor to have that. In these, you know, as a woman, you don't hear that much that, you know, the father was given custody and having to go through, you know, as you mentioned, for Christmas time, you didn't have Sparrow, and, you know,
well, that was retaliation from the criminal charges being dropped. He had access to Sparrow and used the judgment from the family courts that said if the exchanges didn't have it happen at the daycare, like, let's just say the daycare was closed, because all of our exchanges happen at the daycare, so if the daycare was closed, it would fall on the next day that the daycare was open. But that would mean I'd miss him throughout the whole Christmas holiday. So the Child Protection got involved and said, hey, we'll facilitate the exchange so Sparrow can see his mom during the holidays. And he absolutely refused it. So I know it was retaliation because he's angry. He didn't get what he wants. So now he's going to take something away, which is my child. And that was challenging. That was definitely challenging. But, you know, the day that I had Sparrow, I got him in January, started to snow. There was no snow during Christmas. I love the snow. I love the winter. It's my favorite time of the year. And when I picked him up and it started snowing, I was like, yes, God, you are talking to me. You are talking to me. I know it.
My question was going to be, how has your spiritual path been in these past few years?
Well, it's evolved. You know, I grew up in a Baptist church. I don't consider myself religious at all. I was a practicing Muslim for for 6 years. I had studied Hinduism and Buddhism. I'm studying the Kabbalah right now, and in heavily into study of the Bible. And I'm connected with the universe, and I feel definitely a shift happening because I'm more calm and I'm more at peace. And that's how I know there's something working within me, because the things that would get me upset in the past, I just let it go now. And I'm hungry. I'm hungry for knowledge. I'm hungry for spiritual intelligence. So I think I'm seeking more too. But I'm also quite aware that there's corruption in every faith. So I'm really focusing on the spiritual, like nourishing my soul. Yeah. Thank you. Maybe I'll share with our listeners one thing that I've been working on, because when Sparrow came home once, and he's 2.5 years old, I'll never forget, we stepped in the house. The first thing he said to me was, "Mama, you got a big mouth." And this was right before the Women's March last year. It's March 8th, it was. And I was so taken aback by what he had said. And I just said, "Yeah, you're right. Mama does have a big mouth." And we went to the park that evening, and he found this little figurine with this black woman, with a microphone. And he said, "Look, Mama, it's you." And I was like, "Yeah, and I was like, "That's it. I'm a big mouth woman." So I just decided that I want to share my story. I want to help other narcissistic abuse survivors. And I've just been coining this phrase, "I'm a big mouth woman." So if you see this hashtag, use this hashtag, know that it's just share your story, share your truth, speak your truth. It's like so empowering.
Can you tell the listeners where they can find you and more about the Star Child Podcast?
Yes, absolutely. So the Star Parent Podcast is basically available on all major platforms, no worries. You can find us on Instagram at the Star Parent Podcast. In fact, if this gets aired before the February, I'm just written an art grant, and we're trying to increase our followers because I know we'll have an impact on the result of our grant. So if you could like and follow us, share it with others, that would be fantastic. The Star Parent Podcast.
And where can they find you for the improv and comedy?
Oh my goodness. Again, I post a lot of my shows on Instagram, like ahead of time. Friends on Facebook, I also post as well too. Stand-up comedy, I'm still like, whenever I see a face that I know in the crowd, I like... there's nobody that I know. I'm like, I just let it go. So I'm kind of, I usually post after I've already done it. Like, hey, I did a set.
Yeah, I get that. I can relate to that.
Yes.
They know you and there's a certain standard. And then it's like, can I just be fully open without myself putting on this mask of what they knew or my apprehension of how they're interpreting me and everything else. So that just becomes a development of confidence within yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm really, I'm humbled. I'm inspired. I am so thankful that I have been able to cheer you on and keep cheering you on and be a witness of what faith looks like and what resilience looks like. And to be a part of the support in any way that I can. And to always remind you to go within yourself and to see how beautiful you are, how strong you are, how loved you are, and how precious you are. And as Sparrow said, you know, a big mouth woman, mummy, you know. Allow your voice to be amplified. You've dimmed it for way too long. There's been too much of a muzzle. So allow that voice to speak and to share and inspire and help other people through the process of these relationships that, you know, when you're in it, you don't really see fully what's going on. Because I can recall with the podcast, you had to ask your partner to watch Sparrow so that we could record it. And then I think it came in at certain parts and stuff like that during the podcast. So
he did that often, especially if it was somebody that I really cared about. So that's why he did it. Yeah. Everybody that I really cared about, he would always find a way to interrupt or turn off the internet or something. Oh my gosh. Glad you remembered that.
Yeah. So, I'm thankful that, you know, you are coming out on the other side and you're able to show people, you know, faith and the endurance and, you know, really standing in your own truth. And that things are, and that you got the permission to explore a different part that you didn't even know was there. And it, you know, the excitement and the energy that comes out in you, it's a delight to feel that and be energized by it. I'm really thankful that you're finding the areas to play. And, you know, as much as there were dark places and it would be just easy to borrow and stay down and hibernate in those places. And you do at like, you know, everybody has their process, yet you have been determined to get back up. And the biggest thing is ask for help. Yes. You've been asking for help, and that is incredible strength.
So yes.
Thank you for modeling that to others.
Thank you. Thank you for being a living angel in my life. Really, Nat, I've said this to you before. You know, you pop up in my life at the exact moments where I've just about to fall. It's like, it's always been magical how you just kind of show up. So I'm thankful that you're in touch with our connection and that you nourish it and you don't let that fade. And allow me to tell my story here and to share it with others. Asking for help, it's been very, very challenging, especially at the beginning. I was raised from a very, very strong household where we didn't ask for help. We helped other people. We didn't ask for help. And so teaching that to my parents has been beneficial too. They realized like, wow, it's okay to ask for help. So it's really helped a lot of people.
Thank you for being
a guest
and being the gift on your birthday of giving your time, your story, your energy. And I know at least it's always one in a million, and there'll be one person that is going to benefit from listening to
this. And I thank you.
Yes, I thank you. So thank you for being on here with me. And please remember to be kind and gentle with yourself.